Committee on Legislative Operations and Reform will come to order. Marjorie, why don't you tell us what we're doing today?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we have been assigned Senate Bill 5522, which is the legislative branch budget bill. As far as I know, this is the first time a policy committee has been assigned the branch budget bill. My understanding from the president's office is that we will be hearing some policy discussions about the legislative branch and eventually sending a letter to the Ways and Means Committee with this bill and making some recommendations to Ways and Means about some suggestions that we hear in our discussions. And so today we just want a brief overview from the legislative branch agencies about their agencies and their budgets. Unfortunately, Karen Quigley from Indian Services is not able to join us today. However, they are part of the branch, and you do have information in your packets from Karen, since she can't join us today.
Okay, thank you very much. And once again, we are not going to be amending this bill, but we will send our recommendations in the form of a letter to Ways and Means when this bill goes down there.
Thank you.
Ann and Dave, I guess we'll start with you. And then Mr. Rocco is on his way, and Paul Warner will be joining us in about a half an hour. So, Ann, you want to go first?
Certainly. My name is Ann Voss, Legislative Counsel. Good morning, Chair Monroe, members of the committee. It's my pleasure to give you a brief overview of the operations of Legislative Council. You all know that we are one of your essential service agencies. We draft and all of the bills and all of the amendments that are considered by the Assembly. We also, immediately after signee die, publish the only official version of the Oregon Revised Statutes and about six specialty publications. We review the agency OARs to ensure that they are within the scope of the enabling legislation and that they are constitutional. And we also have an indexing group who does indexes to all the legislative publications during session, as well as the ORS post-session. I'd like to talk a little bit about the statistics. I don't have current statistics today because we had a tsunami in our office yesterday of new drafts. Mm-hmm. I estimate that we had over 500 yesterday alone, and over 1,000 since the last statistics were prepared. So what that means is, looking at one of your handouts, that those are the statistics from January the 19th. You would add 1,000 plus to the draft requests we've received in our office. And we're also getting some requests for amendments from committees because of the shortened essential timeline. So there is some tension in terms of prioritizing the original initial bill drafts, which we have to get out of our office by February 26th, and essential amendments. So any help that you can give us in terms of prioritizing, particularly on the amendments, we would appreciate it. My office has currently 15 deputies who prepare all the drafts, and their work is divided by subject matter specialty. Seven of those drafters were hired since March of this year. I'm sorry, of last year. So this summer was an intense period of mentoring, training. Every single draft that the six new drafters had was reviewed by a mentor. They were partnered with a senior drafter, and that was thousands of hours, hundreds of hours of review and training and feedback on their work. So the seven new positions are The seven positions were four people who left, one person retired, and then we had a net two that we were given by the e-board in March of last year. We anticipate some additional staffing needs. In fact, the PCAL, one of the recommendations of the Public Commission on the Legislature was that we examine our staffing, and we are in the process of doing that to see if we need to add more drafters. In addition to drafters, we have senior staff attorneys, too, and we have a publications division, which is one manager, six senior editors, four publication specialists, and four editors. These are the people who review each and every draft and amendment twice to make sure that it is within the proper form and style and that it's as perfect as we can get it. Of course, after session, they immediately put on a different hat and start editing, compiling, and drafting the statutes. A second issue that may come up from the PCAL recommendations would be some adjustments derived from the recommendation of annual sessions. We have a pilot session coming up that will give us an opportunity to examine how this will work with our current business practices, and we will be studying whether or not and how our business practices change as we possibly move to annual sessions. But I would anticipate that we would work on a policy package just for that if the annual sessions come to fruition. We also have an administrative staff consisting of five people who I'm sure you know. Midge and Cunyon, they're the faces of the office, and the air traffic controllers. And we have an accounting manager, an administrative manager, and a computer services manager. And I just want to mention a couple of issues that have also been going on this summer. One is we've dedicated several positions to working on the new bill drafting system that has been contracted for with a company called Propylon. We just completed the first major milestone for that contract and accepted delivery of four essential parts of it, which is the design of the technical architecture, the integration plan, the conversion plan, and about 150 use cases, which are detailed, a combination of technical requirements and organic business requirements that come from what our office does and what it needs, and accepted delivery of that the end of the year. So we had 4 to 6 people at any given time, critical individuals working on those requirements and studying that. In addition, I just want to mention, because as you know, the Oregon Law Commission is a subpart of our budget, and they're not here today, but on their behalf, they are requesting additional funds for an additional staff attorney. And just in terms of our workload within Legislative Council, I estimate this summer, because of the high profile of the ethics issues, that we and other serious work groups that the commission had, our staff do drafting for the law commission, and I would estimate we had 2.5 attorneys at any given time working on those projects over the summer.
So do I hear you saying that you think their recommendation is sound? You need the additional person?
I'm not, I am neutral on their recommendation. Their staff attorney, David Kanegi and Hardy Myers would be the best people to talk to about that.
Okay.
I know that they have a lot of projects and that I can just tell you second or third hand that, yes, they need Health.
Okay. Questions for Ross? Senator?
Thank you. Can you, something that's fascinated me, and I've never really understood how this works, when a state agency asks for a legal opinion of judicial, or of the Attorney General, excuse me, the Attorney General charges the lawyer time back to that agency. And it's always interested me that in the argument of separation of powers, that the executive branch is using the legislative branch, legislative counsel, for pre-session filing. Does your office charge the executive for the use of the legislative branch's lawyers?
Yes, we do. Senator Atkinson, Chair Monroe, members of the committee, we charge $80, which is actually an excellent bargain per hour for our drafting time for state agencies. Theoretically, the agency drafts, that's part of our statutory duty, is to draft agency bills for the state agencies. It comes through our office. And that is, they have a statutory deadline of December 15th. They have to turn in their drafting requests by June the 1st. And it literally, we also draft for elected officials, the Attorney General's office, the Treasurer, the Secretary of State. The state agency bills all go through DAS and the governor's office and have to be approved by the governor's office prior to coming to us. And they are required to have June 1st, we start receiving their drafting request. July 14th, they're supposed to have all of the information necessary to us to draft. And the deadline, we drop pencils on December the 1st, and their filing deadline is December the 15th.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
What percentage of your workload is pre-session or is agency bills versus elected members of the legislature bills?
The prior to... I think I can give you some statistics later at a later, Senator Atkinson, Chair Monroe, members of the committee. I can give you some statistics that actually break that down. But just as an example, I'm going to just look at where the statistics were last week. There were 2,626 drafts that had been received in our office. And agency drafts were 750 of those, 2,626. That's up about 100, I think, from before. I'm sorry, because if Chang Griggs was here, she would correct me. they are working about 450. The Attorney General, Secretary of State, Treasurer is the difference between 450, 750. So state agencies is 450, elected officials about 300.
Does the elected officials, meaning the legislature, House, and Senate members, do we have any priority over executive requests?
I'm sorry.
To our requests?
Senator Atkinson, Chair Monroe, members of the committee, when I spoke of elected officials a moment ago in terms of that number, the 750, I was speaking of other elected officials.
Right.
Just members versus agencies. In terms of priority, our usual rule is first come, first served. But what overcomes that is a statutory deadline. And so during the several months preceding the agency deadline, we're focusing on agency drafts to meet the deadline. And so, yes, they do have priority during that time over members' requests.
One more question, and then I have a question for
Senate President.
What does it take to increase the rate, market rate, from $80 an hour up to $130 an hour?
That would be something that we would examine and take to Legislative Council Committee and request, and could be approved by the Legislative Council Committee. 78% of our budget is general fund. The other part of our budget, that's actually a very small part of our budget.
Not at 700 bills, it's not. 700 pre-sessioned agency bills versus 1,200, 1,400 legislative bills at $80 an hour. That's not a small percentage, is it?
Well, a policy decision has been made in terms of our budget and what part of it is funded by agencies and what piece of it is funded by sales of ORS, because that's what the other 12% is comprised of. That would be a policy decision for Legislative Council Committee to, and certainly this committee to consider, and if you recommended a rate increase, you know, that would be something we would implement.
Mr. Chair, can I ask the Senate President a quick question? Mr. President, do you see a separation of powers issue here at all? Or does it cause you pause that the executive branch has got even if it's just by nature of deadlines, but they have a priority over the elected legislature, and we're giving away attorney fees that we oversee in the executive branch for virtually nothing?
Mr. Chair, Senator Atkinson, one of the reasons I put the bill in this committee was for discussions along these lines, to be frank with you.
Yeah.
So that's a very good question. And when you get through, I was going to ask a few questions too. But I was conscious, believe it or not, when I put the bill in this committee. Conscious, I said, when I did that. So there was some thought that went into this in terms of what we would do as a committee to maybe engage some of these kind of policy discussions as well as even monetary discussions.
Senator Atkinson, Chairman Rowe, President Courtney, if I could comment on the separation of powers issue. I think we are actually doing the drafting for the legislature and for the members. We're required by statute to draft every statute that, or every draft, every bill, every amendment that is considered. So we're doing a legislative function when we're drafting, even for agencies.
No, great answer. We can change the statute.
Okay. Senator Courtney.
Thank you, Chair. You know, I'm a little confused. I understand if the governor's office had brought drafts in yesterday before 5 o'clock, would we have accepted them?
No, sir. Senator Courtney, Chairman Rowe, members of the committee, December 1st, is the absolute drop pencil day for state agencies.
Well, then let me make this distinction, because something's not right, because I got a call last night. If the governor's office, chief legal counsel, the governor's office versus a state agency brought down drafts, would we accept them before 5 o'clock last night?
They would have to have a note from mother, from a member. We only draft for members and committees after December the 1st.
Okay, this figure, you sure the figure in terms of we are billing the governor's office for drafts?
I will correct myself if I'm wrong, but we bill the elected officials, Secretary of State, governor's office, attorney general's office, and the treasurer, $80 an hour. We charge $80 an hour for both attorney time and editing time. So it's an average, and it's usually the bills have a certain number of hours of drafting time and about the same amount of hours of editing time. And we charge the elected officials just as we do state agencies until December the 1st. After that, we only do member requests and committees.
How long has it been $80 an hour? How many years?
I believe that we started billing in 2001, and the rate was around 65. It's been 80 since 2005 for sure, but I'll have to get back to you on those figures.
Okay.
I know it's
only... My lawyer charges about $200 an hour. Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm not sure this...
That's my lawyer charge.
...illuminates this subject or not, but I would refer the committee to page 4 or 5 in your testimony at the bottom. Paragraph, you have approximately 10.4 total million total funds. The general fund budget of 8.1 million, as you referenced, is 20+%. And presumably the other funds are your revenues that you, your billed revenues to the executive department and agencies. And then if you go back to the major requests and take the amount that's received as of your report and then add the 1,000 that have been added since then, and then divide the agency requests and executive requests by that total number of approximately 3,600, you wind up with about 20%. So it would seem to me that in terms of the total expenditure, we're probably charging, just on the basis of bill draft requests, we're probably charging the executive branch and agencies something that's reasonably commensurate to the actual expense. And in fact, we might even be getting a good deal because of the amount of work you do beyond just major requests.
Well,
you want to comment?
Chairman Rubb, Senator Morse, members of the committee, we do additional work on agency requests in the form of amendments, but they have to come through a member, as you know, once session starts or after December the 1st.
Okay. Additional questions? Anne, anything further?
No, I thank you for the time, and we just want to do the very best service that we can with the work number of hours there are in a week.
I just had one question that kind of came to me. It seems unusual that you had as many new people as you did this year, and that's not typical, right?
No, there hasn't been turnover in the legal division for a long time.
That was my memory from back when I was here before, was that, you know, you guys just hung around forever, that we changed, but legislative council seemed like we're there forever. And so to have four people quit. You have four quit, right?
One section of five. Well, yeah. Four.
Four that quit and went something to another job. Do you know why they left? Were they dissatisfied with working here? Did they get a better offer?
I think I can... Chair Monroe, members of the committee, I can summarize the reasons. More money and better working conditions in terms of hours and their family life and health. Because, as you know, the workload is very intense during the period of session and even thereafter because of the deadlines on the publications and other issues. Some people love it, and but we have lost four people, I think, because of pay and because of the working conditions, and that will be a driver in terms of my request in my policy package.
Okay. Legislative counsel are all attorneys, of course. What's the approximate salary range?
It starts out around, we have two different ranges. We have deputy and then we have senior deputy. The salary range for deputy starts around 43,000 and goes up to 68, and the senior deputy goes up to around 82 to 85.
Okay, it's no wonder you're losing people.
I need to get you the specific information on that because I don't have our chart with me.
Okay.
But it's around that.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, an observation. Yes. If you raise the attorney fee $100 and 800 agency bills, I think you can safely get 1.25 more lawyers.
And half as many agency bills.
Okay. And thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Okay, Mr. Henderson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dave Henderson, the legislative administrator. You have in front of you a document that looks like this. It's a one-page front and back document. It says legislative administration at the top of it. I'm going to give you a very high-level overview of the services that legislative administration provides to the Assembly and to the other legislative agencies. The Legislative Administration Committee was created in 1969, pulling together some activities that until that time had been contracted out either to the Secretary of State's office or the old Executive Department or various offices within the executive branch. The committee consists of four senators. The co-chair is the president of the Senate, and he appoints three other senators to serve. The other co-chair is the Speaker of the House, and he appoints four House members to serve with him. So it's a nine-member committee that meets typically on about a quarterly basis during the interim period. We provide services through six offices. Basically, the administrator's office, and if you want to flip that page over, there's a brief description of the six offices. The administrator's office is responsible for the overall management and administration of the agency. The agency has approximately 100 full-time employees throughout the two-year biennium, and then we bring in about 50 people to supplement that during a legislative session. Within my office, in addition to my position, I have the web editor, and that has become an increasingly critical position. In fact, Senator Courtney had the opportunity last night to participate in a public training session that was coordinated by the web editor, where we had a hearing room full of average citizens who came in to see how does the legislative process work. It's an issue that was discussed within the public commission. We explained to the commission that we had been doing this for several years, and they strongly encouraged us to continue that. This is the first time we've done it in the evening, which increased participation. We had a panel of three legislators, lobbyist, and had, as I said, a room full, and we actually had citizens in a second overflow room as well.
Just Chair, I must interrupt. Senator Frank Morris was also there.
Yes, on there. I apologize. That's true. And Representative Diane Rosenbaum was the other legislator, and they gave excellent presentations. Also in my office is the building use coordinator, and she handles all of the room reservations and special arrangements for all of the groups that come and visit the Capitol. Also part of the administrator's office is visitor services, which is housed in the kiosk out here, and I think we've got four paid staff in that office, but we've got 48 wonderful volunteers who come in and do everything from serve as doorkeepers on the third floor, coming in and out of the chambers during session, that we've got folks stationed in the galleries to direct citizens who come to show them where they can sit and to try to keep order if anything starts to get out of hand there. They conduct tours. It is a wonderful operation that saves literally tens of thousands of dollars for the state, and we're able to provide services to something on the order of 300,000 visitors to the building on a regular basis. Committee Services is the office that Marjorie works in, and that is the office that provides staffing, both an administrator and an assistant to each of the standing committees during a legislative session. We've got 8 continuing positions for committee administrators, and then we hire something on the order of 12 to 15 administrators to work during a legislative session. Part of the Committee Services Office is the Legislative Library and Public Access Room. This is a reference library where we maintain a collection of legislature-specific documents that staff, legislators, the public are free to go in and do research. We have, I believe it's either 3 or 4 public access computers in the library where members of the public can come in, do research both on our systems that maintain information about bills plus general internet research. They can use those to draft testimony, print it out, and basically it facilitates citizen involvement in the legislative process. Information Systems is the office that runs all of the technology, meaning the computer systems and the closed circuit television system that operates here in the building. We run, obviously, a local area network. All legislators now have at least 2 PCs in their offices, as well as a printer. We maintain all of the desktop computers for all of the staff that work in the building as well. They run the mainframe computer, which is still used for the bill drafting system. We will transition off of that following this session, and prior to the 09 session, we'll actually be drafting everything on the network rather than on the mainframe computer. That is a project that started back in the late 90s and has been progressing very well since then. We are working very closely with Legislative Council right now on that bill drafting system. And as Ann said, we just received the first major deliverable on that just about a month ago, and we are moving forward on that project. Part of the Information Systems Office is Legislative Media. This is the office down in the basement that runs all of the closed-circuit television system in the building, and they maintain the sound systems here in the hearing rooms. Probably the most exciting thing that we've got going through Legislative Media right now was the kickoff of the Oregon Channel. This is a partnership between Legislative Media, Oregon Public Broadcasting, Southern Oregon Public Television, and we've got 2 other partners in the process, too, and that's the Oregon University System and the Oregon Public Affairs Network. This is a network that is now providing gavel-to-gavel, unedited coverage of legislative meetings for citizens throughout the state, both on a broadcast basis on digital channels through our public television partners and on a website that is maintained for the Oregon Channel as well. So any citizen anywhere in the state can pretty much now tap in and view what is going on here in the Capitol at any given time. We run 24/7. So the meetings that we are not able to carry live, we tape delay. So folks at 2 and 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning can be tuning in if they're insomniacs and they want to watch what's going on with the legislative process. In fact, I was at home last night at 6 o'clock and tuned in on the local cable channel, the digital channel on our cable system, and observed the training session for the public that took place. I think it was in this hearing room. It's a wonderful new project. It's being run as a pilot project right now. Our hope, and I know that the hope of OPB and SOPTV is that it becomes a permanent placement, and that is something that we will talk about through the session and determine what it will take to make that whole network permanent. The next office that I want to talk about is Facility Services. These are the folks that keep the building running. They keep it hopefully warm in the winter and cool in the summer. They take care of your garbage. They take care of running the supply and bill room downstairs, which provides copies of legislation to members of the public, and the lobby provides office supplies to you and other offices in the building. They do long-term maintenance issues, and they do space planning, and everything that relates to the physical plant of the Capitol itself. Employee services is your HR office. They maintain all of the personnel records for the entire legislative branch. They run recruitments. They handle all hiring, benefits, payroll, everything that relates to an HR shop. And finally is financial services. This is the office that does all the budgeting and accounting for legislative administration and the legislative assembly, and they provide some services to council, fiscal, and revenue as well. That, as I said, is a very high-level overview of legislative administration, and I would be happy to answer any specific questions that you might have about our agency.
Yeah, one of the recommendations of the commission was that we beef up security in this building, mm-hmm. and they had some specific recommendations. Mr. Wilhelms and Ms. Pryor came here last week, had some specific recommendations on ways that we could beef up security without locking the public out, keeping the building essentially open but more secure. Do you have any comments on that?
Yes, Chairman Rowe, members of the committee. We have, over the course of the years, had a number of assessments that have been conducted here at the Capitol. I believe Mr. Wilhelms referenced a Secret Service survey that was done several years ago. We have also had the Oregon State Police conduct an assessment of the building, and the Marion County Sheriff's Office conducted an assessment of the building. Each of those resulted in a number of recommendations. Some of which have been adopted and implemented and are in place right now, some of which are on a list of potential projects for us to take on, and some of which we don't know if, given the public nature of the building, if they're realistic to implement. One thing we have done, each assessment identified the underground parking area as one of the most vulnerable parts of the building, and we have increased the security there with the doors that are now in place. Following 9/11, those doors went in, which lessens the ability of people to pull through. Prior to that, any person driving down State Street could pull under the Capitol and drive right through the underground parking. So we have addressed that. Beyond that, we've got a number of security cameras in the building. We've taken steps. We've increased the Oregon State Police presence outside the chambers during floor sessions. I know that we would like to have additional security. Recognizing the budget problems that the Oregon State Police have, that's something that we would need to work in conjunction with them, and I know there are proposals that would increase the funding for the Oregon State Police. But we do have an excellent working partnership with the State Police. They have an office here in the building, which is headed by Lieutenant Ethan Wilson. One thing you do need to recognize is that in addition to providing services here in the Capitol, they are also responsible for all of the other state buildings on the Capitol Mall. So with a relatively small number of officers, they are providing support to a very large geographical area.
Okay. Questions?
Yeah,
Senator Courtney.
Okay, let me understand this. This bill, 5522, is the governor's recommendation, correct?
Chairman Rowe, Senator Courtney, it is the governor's recommendation, but my understanding is that in the legislative branch budget, the governor does not make any changes to what is submitted by the offices within the legislative branch.
So basically, the amounts in here relative to your area are acceptable. Is that correct?
Chairman Rowe, Senator Courtney, I would have to look at the governor's recommended budget in detail to be able to answer that. I can't answer that right now.
Well, what I'm saying is, this is nice. You're doing good. Thank you for the overview. But I can't get any feel at all from here, from this, Mr. Henderson, about what you may think we need in addition to whatever is here. I can't even begin to recommend the Ways and Means. What we should or should not do in your specific area, for example, in view of your testimony. Now, I'm not trying to, you understand, a great overview, I'm happy, and we have a number of keen minds on this committee who deal in the budgetary sense, but I don't know how to react to what they may or may not need in view of where we're at right now. And I do expect this committee, I'll be very frank with you, to get into some of that. So I don't know Maybe, Mr. Chair, help me. This is just a public hearing. Now, is that your intention to get down the road, or just today was just a quick overview, or can you help me with that?
Yes, we would expect at least one more.
At least one, maybe two more meetings.
All right, that helpful. Let's just, if you understand, and maybe you're the chair, I'm just curious to know what direction you're going to take us in terms of the questions or the what I'm asking about here, Mr. Chair. Do you?
Well, we need to get into a little more detail. For example, when it's my turn, I'll ask Mr. Henderson some questions about legislative administration and how he sees that, and because one of the recommendations of the commission was to improve our individual and collective staffing. So I want to know about that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me to ask the question. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Senator Atkinson.
Thank you. A couple of questions, actually. That's all right, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
I guess the first one builds upon what Senator Courtney was saying. This building falls back to the earlier question I was asking about separation of powers. This building, the maintenance in your shop, falls under the preview of the legislative branch, not the executive. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. So at a certain point, what Senator Courtney is asking about having a handle on the governor's proposed recommended budget over something that the legislature should be having our own proposed recommended budget for is kind of us giving away our own responsibility to the wrong channel of government, wrong branch of government.
Chair Monroe, Senator Atkinson, let me address that, and I think this will address Senator Courtney's question as well. We do have a list of 13 option packages that we submitted in addition to our base budget that I will be happy to go into detail with you at any time that you would like to do that. And those are the items that address the issues of improved staffing and some of the facilities issues that we are facing that Senator Atkinson is very well aware of.
So does that one of those packages, does that have us calling for bonding of the fixing these decrepit wings that
Chairman,
we call our home?
Senator Atkinson, yes, there is a package for that.
Okay, I know that the committee would probably want to see those, Mr. Chair. A few more questions, is that
all right?
Thanks. There's been some moving around of the Capitol Press, their offices downtown or downstairs. The new press rooms and whatnot. Do we charge a fair market value for the rents down there?
Chair Monroe, Senator Atkinson, we do. We charge the rate that is established by the Department of Administrative Services, which they charge all state agencies, and we base our charge for those people who are leasing space in the building on that same DAS uniform rent rate is what it's referred to as.
Is it written in statute anywhere that, and this is, believe me, this is going somewhere, is it written in statute anywhere that House and Senate members need to have the exact same footprint of office space?
Chairman Monroe, Senator Atkinson, no.
So if the Oregon State Senate decided to expand itself to the fourth floor and to provide adequate staff for all of us, that would be within the purview. We wouldn't have to change a statute to do that.
You would not have to change any statute to do that.
Do you think there's a separation of powers issue? I do. Maybe an ethical issue. But with us giving away fantastic office space to the lobby that's not open to anyone else in the public,
Chairman,
we
Monroe,
give them excellent office space in the lobby message center.
Chairman,
because
Monroe,
that's the way it's always been done, at the expense of the Oregon legislature tripping all over ourselves and not having adequate staff space.
Senator Atkinson, the only point that I would make is that they do pay the same rent rate that members of the media pay. So they do pay for that space. It is not given to them at no charge.
Well, I think a question for this committee is that ethical, to give away primo office space to people who are making money off the system at the expense of us being trapped in there in little teeny offices because, quote, unquote, that's the way it's always been done. Lastly, we had talked about some time ago a history center that your facility would be overseeing and some of the electrical display issues that we've seen out by your kiosk. Have those been rectified, or do I need to point those out next week?
Chair Monroe, Senator Atkinson, the History Center that you refer to was a brainchild of Senator Avakian during the last session. It is the legislature passed a resolution directing the legislative administrator to identify space in the Capitol to house the History Center. I have worked with the Oregon State Capitol Foundation over the course of the last 2 years to consider various options in the building, and we, I think the foundation believes we have identified space that would be appropriate for such such an enterprise.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, in addition to the questions that the senator asked about utilization of this building, one of the things that they talked about, the commission talked about, was whether or not the state treasurer, state secretary of state, should be moved out of this building into, you know, their other headquarters, so as to free up more space for legislative use. That's something I'd be happy to hear from you. Do you think that would work or made sense? And we're going to have you back probably in 2 weeks to give us a lot more detail about your packages and some of your suggestions, things that could possibly be done. Senator Avakian.
Thank you. And you've touched on it already with respect to the policy packages, which I'm glad you mentioned. But this notion of the Wings Project, I just think is so critical for this session, and not just to June, but we need to get moving on it right away. And so when you come back in 2 weeks, I'm hoping that we get some very detailed information about the additional burden that huge project places on your staff and what that means in terms of money. And then in addition to those specifics, it seems to me that a project of that magnitude is very difficult to gauge how the burden might change as we get into it. So if there's any way for you to give us a sense of the kind of flexibility that you're going to need in staffing and in funding for the project as we get into it, I think we ought to have that discussion now. And then lastly, we've talked a little bit about the timeliness of this and how we need to get moving quick so that you can get the bonding out. It would be good to have some very specific dates at which action needs to be taken by this committee and by this body in order to enable you to get the project done.
I'd be happy to do that.
Okay. Additional questions for Mr. Henderson. Mr. Henderson, your brief here on the Legislative Assembly, we'll hold that and okay. Review that the next time you're with us. That'll be okay.
Very good.
Okay. And thank you very much, Ms. Boss, Mr. Henderson.
Thank you, Chairman Rowe. I just wanted to add to the record, sure. Chairman Rowe, members of the committee, Lori Christopher, the Employee Services Director for the legislature, brought a staff listing for Legislative Council with the salary range. So you can have that as part of your package on the Legislative Council office.
And is that going to give us some comparison with other states?
No, Chairman Rowe, members of the committee, but we will do that at our next meeting.
I'd love to have that as well, because it seems to me, I don't know, those salaries seem very low to me.
We will get you that information at
Thank
the
you.
Next meeting.
Thank you.
I think
much.
Stoll Reeves pays, not that we want to charge what Stoll Reeves does, I think they pay their law clerks twice what a starting salary is for one of our experienced lawyers in some respects.
I hope my experienced lawyers aren't watching this too closely right now.
Thanks, Sam.
Sorry, Ms. Boss.
Okay, Ken Rocco, Legislative Fiscal. And Paul Warner, Legislative Revenue.
Mr. Chair, I think the Senate President is begging for a call.
No, because I'll just get in.
Senator Courtney?
No, we'll just. Stoll Reeves, that's the biggest firm in the state, is that correct?
Yes.
Not an international firm, is it correct?
Not a good comparison, is that what you're saying?
It's an international firm, is that right? If I may, counsel.
Certainly.
Do you know what the average salary of an attorney is in the state of Oregon?
in the state of Oregon?
You know, that's an interesting question, because when you put in the people that do a lot of the civil rights-oriented public law, things like that, it brings the cost way down. I would bet you it's not more than $60,000.
Probably right.
Yeah.
We just have a little banner here. I'll be still now.
Sure.
For the record, I'm wearing shoes today, and I have to say that because we'll be to the esteemed witnesses here in a minute, but I was at the public meeting last night, which we had in the hearing room E, where we went out to the world and said this is how the legislative process works. At least after 6 o'clock, 6:30, just a certain member of the Senate referred to how I dress and that he didn't want to be compared to me because at least he wears shoes and I wear tennis shoes. Today, and they're beautifully shine, I'm wearing shoes, and they're killing me. I mean, absolutely killing my feet. So I want you to know, since I'm on that committee with that individual right here, that I'm wearing shoes. I'm taking them off after this meeting's over, I'm telling you that. So for the record, Mr. Chair, for your committee, I will wear these shoes at least today, and I may wear them a number of days. So I want that on the record. And notice I did not indicate who I'm talking about at all.
Yes, I noticed that. Senator Courtney, some of us that walk to the Capitol every day from our apartment actually keep dress shoes in the closet and wear more comfortable footwear to and from.
Thank you. That's a good advice. Maybe that's the way I should handle my life.
Okay. Mr. Rocco.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before I give you an overview of the Legislative Fiscal Office, I thought I might just address the questions you had about the governor's recommended budget. Basically, the legislature submits budget information to the governor's staff. However, they do not make changes to it. All they do is they take... Generally, they take whatever average increase or decrease that state agencies get in the overall governor's budget, and they apply that to the legislative branch. So in past sessions, for example, we've taken like a 5% reduction, unspecified. They just take it out of LA legislative administration usually. And this time there was an increase because of the budget situation. So there's additional money in the governor's recommended budget for the legislative branch, although the governor doesn't specify where he wants that spent. And normally we don't send packages to the governor because they're usually just eliminated. So the tradition is that the legislature decides on its own budget and passes the bill. So that's basic process that occurs.
The co-chair told me we should just ignore the governor's budget anyway and do our own thing.
No comment. I'm not commenting. Nice try, Senator.
Go ahead, Ken.
Nice
try, he says.
It's what he said. I'm paraphrasing, but it's an accurate paraphrase.
Well, for the Legislative Fiscal Office, I've given you an overview, and I can go through this really quick. The agency was created in 1959, and we're a nonpartisan professional staff office. We have a mission that's outlined in statute in Chapter 173, and a number of things we're required to do, mostly, as you would imagine, surrounding the budget. The fiscal officer position is appointed twice a biennium, once by the Ways and Means Committee and once by the Emergency Board. We have 19 permanent full-time staff people, and we add about four. We used to add five, but now it's usually four positions for session, and these are committee assistant positions for our subcommittees. And those are in the legislative administration budget. They're not in our budget. Our current biennium approved budget is about $4.8 million, and it's primarily salaries. Our org chart, you can see we're relatively a flat organization. There's the fiscal officer position, a deputy position, We have two administrative support staff people right ongoing, and then we have three levels of analysts. We have a principal analyst series, a senior, and a legislative analyst. The legislative analysts generally take care of fiscal impact statements, but they also have budget assignments. And we are structured in a way that each analyst has a set of agencies that they are responsible for, budget monitoring, development, and watching the execution of the budget for that particular agency. And in addition, my position has one agency budget assignment, and the deputy also has an agency budget assignment. Our main responsibilities are to provide staff support for the Ways and Means Committee. In the interim, we also staff the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology, the Emergency Board, and then we also will staff any other committee that leadership decides that will be either a session committee or an interim committee. During session, our major responsibilities are to prepare fiscal impact statements, budget reports, and staff measure summaries for the bills in Ways and Means, not just the budget bills, but all referred bills that come to Ways and Means. We become the staff support for those bills once they come to Ways and Means. We review measures that are pending in other committees for fiscal impact, and then we develop fiscal impact statements for the bills that are scheduled for work session. We do an analysis and a review of the governor's budget proposal, and we just put that out last week or week before in two versions, a detailed agency-by-agency analysis and then a summary analysis. And those are also posted on our website, as are the fiscal impact statements are also available on the web. We are responsible for helping the co-chairs develop the Ways and Means budget and the legislature's adopted budget. And we also, during session, try to respond to member questions regarding state agency finances or budgets. After the session is over, we produce another two documents, a detailed analysis by agency and a summary report on the legislatively adopted budget. And then during the interim, we our primary activity lately has been with the Emergency Board, where we have to analyze and make recommendations on agency requests. And sometimes that agenda is 90 separate items, and the e-board meets about every 3 months roughly. We also do program evaluations and audit reviews for the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, and we also have to do similar types of analysis and recommendations to the Information Management and Technology Committee. We produce briefs on budget topics and that are topical of interest, and we produce those on our web. We're also responsible for producing a report on the delinquent accounts and the review of the budgets of semi-privatized agencies, and those we've just completed both of those, and they're also available on our website. And then we also spend a lot of time monitoring state agency budget execution during the interim. And then finally, over this last interim, we did an exercise to develop a business plan. And so I added two slides for you that show some of our goals and some of the actions that we're planning for the 07-09 biennium. And just to point out a couple of those, we would like to, if possible, take a look at all of the statutes regarding the budget process. Over the years, they have been amended and added to, and they're a little confusing right now and somewhat outdated, and we would like to take a look at those and make some recommendations in the 09 session for some streamlining of those statutes. We're intending to implement a process to review the data submitted by agencies on key performance measures, Right now, we've been working diligently to get a performance measure system in place, and I think the next step is to start randomly auditing some of the data that is supplied, especially on the actual experience on some of these performance measures. We're going to look into continuing enhancements in our budget system, our automated budget system, which is known as Orbit. And we're also going to look at some strategies to give us more expertise in providing support to the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology. And with that, well, I'd like to point out in the bill you're looking at, Senate Bill 5522, we are, the Legislative Fiscal Office is Section 12 of that bill. Our proposed budget is what we call an EBL budget, or an essential budget level. We don't have any packages in at this time, and it does is take our existing 0507 budget and roll it up for cost to continue all of the things we're doing into the 0709 biennium. And I did bring some detailed Orbitz reports with our budget detail if you'd like to go through these, or I can bring it back next time.
Okay. Mr. Rocco, we're going into a little different situation here with the 08, the brief 08 session that's planned for next winter. Have you anticipated that and how that will affect your office in terms of e-board needs, in terms of overall staffing and responsibilities?
Mr. Chair, we have had discussions with leadership offices about that, and it is our understanding that there may not be any e-board meetings immediately after session until that annual session occurs in February of 08. So that will require some adjustments in processes that we have. We do then expect to have the e-board active after that February 08 session in order to cover that period of time before the next legislature meets. As far as staffing goes, we're not, since this is a pilot kind of a approach, we're not sure. We think we can probably deal with it with current staffing levels, but we're not sure yet. Part of it depends on what kind of interim activity we have, whether the Ways and Means Committee is going to keep meeting as an interim committee or not. We don't know those plans yet. So we're not thinking at this point that we would need any more staff. But until those plans are fully fleshed out, I'm not willing to commit to that. So.
Okay. And if that process becomes permanent through a vote of the public, then you could review that again.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
And the trial of this biennium could give you some guidance in terms of what the needs would be on a permanent basis.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. Questions? Senator Morse?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is the emergency board authority constitutional or statutory?
I think it's just statutory. Senator Morse. Let me check on that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I know it's statutory Courtney? In terms of the number we get and they get.
That's correct.
Because I had a battle royal over that. We get less than they get. You should know that. So the Senate does. That's all in statute. As we attempted to change it last session, that plane never got off the ground. Could I ask a question, please?
Yes.
Do you think you were here to hear the dialogue we had about the amount of money Legislative Council charges for doing bills for other than legislators, Mr. Rocco, state agencies, governor's office? You evaluated that, haven't you?
Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, the amount that they actually charge agencies
mm-hmm.
for bill drafting?
Mm-hmm.
We haven't evaluated that, and I think the council did that on their own and decided what they needed to charge people to recover partial costs of their staff attorneys.
So, also the rates we charge for use of this building, have you overseen that or evaluated that at all?
Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, we are looking into that with legislative administration about whether that's a valid method of charging for space here, because it's based on the it's not based specifically on the needs of this building. For example, it's based on a uniform rent rate that the Department of Administrative Services charges other state agencies for their buildings, which has certain built-in costs for certificates of participation for new buildings and things like that. So we are looking into that to see if that's a valid way of charging people for space in this building.
And then, if I may, just I gotta go back then. So if you're looking into that, you don't look into the Legislative Council because why?
Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, we have just not reviewed that charge as that I'm aware of. I'd be glad to look into it, however, if you'd like.
Is there any distinctions between the governor's office, per se, legal counsel, and state agencies in general in terms of these costs, the charging, or do you have knowledge or anything? Do you have any, are you aware of that at all?
Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, I believe most of the attorney charges in the state are through the Department of Justice, and they have an assessment rate that they charge agencies that's set by the legislature, approves a rate for them to charge. And I believe right now it's for their attorney level, it's somewhere over about $112 an hour or something like that.
I'm a bit confused right now, to tell you the truth, because we know believe me, we know what the AG is doing. And they charge you every time you talk. And I'm not here to cast aspersions on that. But I'm unclear on what we're doing in terms of our charges and how they developed and who oversees them and things. And I was before I walked in here today. So, but you're telling me you're not that conversant with it either. I'm not, again, trying to set you up. But you're not as conversant with that as perhaps you would want to be to answer my question. Is that correct or am I wrong?
Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, you're right. We're not, we haven't looked into that in any detail, but we'd be glad to check that out for you.
Yeah, Mr. Rocco, when we have you back in, next week or 2 weeks?
Couple weeks.
In 2 weeks, maybe you could do some investigating in the interim time answer the question more succinctly.
Yes, Mr. Chair, we'll do that.
Okay. Senator Courtney, anything more?
Are you happy, Mr. Rocco?
Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, I'm generally not a happy person, but right now I'm very thrilled with what's going on.
He's not happy I put the bill in his committee, see, so I wanted to give him an opportunity, because they know they're safe to say these things, because I'm going to express his feelings. But then he messed it up when he said he's not a happy person anyway, so, I can't do anything with that. I'm not happy either. I don't want to get into a sensitivity session with him, but you understand what I'm saying. So I gave him the opportunity to tell me, in front of all you, exactly what he thinks of me in terms of putting this bill, 5522, in this committee.
Thank you. Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe it would be helpful as we get into the issue around legislative counsel and compensation and billing charges. We have received this morning a schedule from the legislative counsel in terms of their pay schedule. It would be helpful to have the same corresponding pay schedule for the AG's office for attorneys on that side of government so that we can understand better. Are we even competitive within our own house?
I had the same thought, Senator Morse, so Mr. Rocco will look into that, and when he comes back, we'll have that information. Okay, we have one more. Mr. Warner.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I'm here to talk about the Legislative Revenue Office, Paul Warner, Legislative Revenue Officer. We are considerably smaller size than the previous three agencies you've discussed. Legislative Revenue Office was created in 1975, and we have six FTE, full-time. We have myself, four economists, an office manager, and then we have three clerical staff during the session. Those clerical staff are funded out of the assembly budget, the LAC budget. So they're not actually part of our budget. What I provided you is just a layout of what our mission is. That's to provide objective, unbiased research for both the House and Senate Revenue Committees, the legislature in general, and the public. In terms of the legislative process we're in now, we screen all bills and determine whether they should be flagged as a possible revenue impact. Our revenue impact statements then have to be issued when a bill goes into work session if we flagged it. In fact, it has to be issued whether it's a no revenue impact or a yes. We do work very closely with fiscal on that. We have a more narrow definition of bills that we issue a revenue impact statement on. Anything that's related to taxes for general purposes, any of the major taxes, obviously, changes in credits or just changes in the tax base in any way will flag. Anything on school finance that changes the distribution formula because that affects the revenue going to individual school districts. If they are fees that are general in nature, for example, a document recording fee that would affect a broad group of individuals, we will flag that as a revenue impact. If it's a fee that is part of the governor's budget, that is specific to a particular expenditure for a small agency, we typically give that a no revenue impact, and then that's picked up in the fiscal impact statement that fiscal office prepares. So we do are responsible for going through each of the bills and determining that most of those bills will find their way to one of our revenue committees, but a number of them don't, and so we have to work with other committees to make sure they have those statements. We do spend a lot of time preparing research reports, particularly on initiatives. For example, we prepared one on Measure 48 and Measure 41. We just finished one on the 2% surplus kicker revenue limit. So we try to provide that not only for you in terms of your policy-making decisions, but also to the general public. We get asked a lot on that, especially when we get into initiatives and try to provide that kind of general information on revenue issues. And, of course, what we spend most of our time on during the session and the interim is staffing our House and Senate Revenue Committees. Interim Revenue Committees, those that are designated task forces, for example, the Senate President directed us to staff the Senate Commission on Education Excellence in this past interim, and we've typically done various task forces and in interims. Our appointing authority is under the same ORS as Legislative Fiscal Office. My appointing authority as Legislative Revenue Office is the chairs of the House and Senate Revenue Committees. If there's not a chair or if it's in an interim, one has not been appointed, my appointing authority is the Speaker and the Senate President. We have been asked as part of the budget process to develop performance measure criteria, and my response to that has been basically we are really directed to try to provide high quality objective information, and really I think the best feedback we get is from you as decision makers on that information. So we have recommended surveys be taken of legislators as to that information. And those are the results we got from this last interim. I printed in that printout. So that we use as a feedback in terms of overall performance measure. As we go into the 07-09 budget period, we have generally the kinds of goals we've had in the past. The main thing we try to do is identify information, emerging revenue issues. Some of the issues we've identified for the session and a number of you are beginning to work on now. We are working with the Senate Revenue Committee on reserve fund development, on tax compliance issues, which we spent a lot of time on last session and in the interim, energy incentives in the House in particular now, excise tax proposals. Of course, we have a series of those in most time periods. And the other issue that we spend a lot of time on in the background because of the the imbalance of our revenue system. We spend a lot of time working at various times on tax reform proposals, and those are comprehensive reforms. This requires us to look at other states a lot to try to determine, you know, the revenue that could be generated from tax bases that we don't currently use, and that causes us to stretch our analysis to try to make that type of assessment. We do maintain some computer models for us that help us do our analysis. We have a personal income tax calculator that has about 50,000 income tax filers as a sample. We work with Department of Revenue to get that data and maintain that on a regular basis so we can look at any income tax proposal. We also have what we call OTIM, or Oregon Tax Incidence Model, which allows us to look at economic feedback effects of revenue changes. We think it's one of the most sophisticated in the country in terms of telling us what some of those long-term economic implications may be of major revenue proposals. It also tells us the distribution of the tax burden, which is something we're frequently asked. For us, as we look out over a six-year time horizon, kind of look at what our plans might be, you know, an office of our size, really, its personnel is the key issue. I think Ken mentioned that nearly all of his costs are personnel. Ours are almost 90% personnel. So for us, the key is to maintain a skilled staff. And we have retirements, and we have been fortunate to have very limited turnover. For example, I am the third revenue officer since 1975. So that shows that we have had some stability there. We've lost some good younger people in the last few years, which bothered me, because they were people that had developed and I thought were really becoming productive. And they were more in terms of, I don't think, related so much to the kinds of salary we offer, but more in terms of personal decisions. So, but we do have some retirements coming in the next few years, so that's something we do emphasize in trying to get high-quality people in those positions. On the back side of your handout, I've just got the organizational chart, our current House and Senate revenue chairs, kind of how our responsibilities are laid out. I kind of get to pick the general issues and try to direct some of the things down to the folks that are really doing detailed analytical work for us. We have a property tax economist. We have an economist that looks at school finance, the school distribution formula. Of course, it emerged from the revenue committees back in 1991, and we have a model that looks at any proposed changes of that. We have all income tax changes. We have an economist assigned to that. And then we have an economist assigned to look at transportation taxes, excise taxes, consumption taxes, kind of a potpourri of things, a lottery. If there's an area where we probably don't cover as well as I would like to, it would be in the area of local finance. We have a lot of proposals, a lot of changes at the local area, particularly on excise taxes, various other local finance issues that we try to keep track of. But as you know, there's a lot of different options out there. We also have our office manager who's with us on a regular basis, and then we have our staff during the session. Our budget, and as your fiscal officer has explained to you, the 0709 agency request is really just kind of an arithmetic extrapolation of the overall budget. We just submit what our numbers are for the current biennium. The proposal here is basically a maintenance of the status quo, the essential budget level. We think it would allow us to continue to do the things for you that we've done over the last couple of years. My reaction in terms of additional responsibilities, basically, if there are things additionally you want us to do, to let us know, and we would give you a sense of what kind of resource capacity we would have. We have looked at the new timing schedule with the February session. We don't think at this point it'll have a direct effect on our personnel costs. It'll cause us to change our timing a bit, but as Ken said, I think we need to get a sense of how that pilot works and how that might affect our workload, but at this point I can't see it having a direct impact on our overall size of our budget.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Warner? Senator Avakian?
Apologize if I missed it as you were going through it, but anybody in your office track tax expenditures?
Tax expenditures are actually the tax expenditure report originally came from the Legislative Revenue Office. It was prepared as a pilot during the interim of 1994. It was put in statute in 95. We are directed to evaluate tax expenditures actually in statute. We do spend a great deal of time with that. Department of Revenue is responsible for preparing the report. We review all of their estimates. When a new tax expenditure comes into the report, of course, the first thing they've got to go on is our revenue impact. So the first thing we do is talk about that. Is that still relevant? Have things changed? And before they can actually start looking at returns and getting an idea of how much credit usage there is for various things. So we work very closely with the Department of Revenue Research Section. They are the providers of all our data. And so and we review the tax expenditure report, and we start off with that as an important part of our legislative revenue review process.
We're very short on time, but if I just one more. We're very short on time, but I just one thing I've never been able to get my hands around is why statutorily these credits and deductions and so on are deemed expenditures, which would seem to me that they would fall within Mr. Rocco's purview as opposed to yours, though we don't treat them that way. Is there a reason?
Well, Senator, I think that there was an intent behind the term tax expenditure, and that was to show that changes in the tax base, reductions in the tax base, have the same effect on the budget as an increase in expenditures would. And I think that, that was the reason for that terminology. And most states now, 30-some-odd, have a tax expenditure report. It ended up in the Revenue Office purview because it's looking at the tax base. And if you look at just about all of those tax expenditures over the last, 10 or 15 years, they have come through the revenue committees. So I think that was the reason for assigning that. The tax expenditure is to give you a sense that a recognition that they have a similar effect on the overall budget.
Okay, we're going to have to call this to an end. When we bring you back, we would like to know, have your assessment of the salaries in your offices, whether you think they're appropriate compared to other states, other similar types of work, and also whether or not your staffing, FTE, are adequate, and especially adequate going into the concept of annual sessions. And we will have you back in 2 weeks or so. Okay? And with that, next week, Senator Atkinson is going to lead us on a little field trip to look at the building, look at our facilities, and some of the needs. So we'd ask that everybody please try to be prompt and be here at 10:30 a week from today so that we can go off on our little field trip.
You'll enjoy
it. Mr. Atkinson, I would ask that you would work with Marjorie to make sure that that's all properly planned, whatever we need.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else to come before the committee? Not. This committee is adjourned until next week.